This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by The Ben Shapiro Show. Heard weeknights, 6 to 9, right here on KTTH. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? A Jason Rant exclusive.
At least 118 Seattle police officers have separated from the department, I have confirmed. In September alone, 39 officers left the department. Typically, in this month, you'll see between 5 and 7 police officers separating. It is so bad that even new recruits are leaving. Now, yesterday, we brought you some of those numbers, mostly because I wanted to make sure I was the first person to do so. Turns out I was. But not only were we the first people to actually talk about this, and I say people because I bring in our community, our large staff, our producer Peyton, our intern Ian, we do all of this work together.
I basically broke this story. How involved I am in
almost.
This.
Almost. You almost did break the story in that you were here when I broke the story. But right now, other outlets are saying it's actually 110. They are wrong. They are wrong. They're using city data in a report coming from Mayor Jenny Durkan's office. The report ends up stopping with their numbers with September. We know that at least 8 officers have separated in the month of October. Now, something else other people are talking about today, even though we broke the story last night at KTTH.com, is that right now we only have 1,200 officers who are considered deployable. Not deplorable, but deployable, meaning they can be deployed in patrol should we need to. 1,200 for the entire city. Now, number one, that number is the lowest it has been in 2 decades. However, what you'll only hear about on this show, on this station, is that number is incredibly misleading because there are a bunch of officers right now within that 1,200 number that aren't showing up to work. They are using their accrued sick time. They are burning through their sick time, for which a lot of them have a ton of sick time to use. And they're doing that until they can officially escape the city of Seattle, start to work elsewhere, or they're just buying time until they retire. I want you to think about that. 118 officers, which almost assuredly is going to be much higher than that by the end of this year. They have separated since January. The bulk of them decided to leave exactly when you thought they would. As the Seattle City Council embraced the radical activists who have been pushing to defund them. Now, when we say separate, we are talking all inclusive. This includes resignations, saying, I'm just done, I'm out. This includes resigning and then going to a department in another city like Bellevue or Everett, maybe going into the King County Sheriff's Department, Pierce County. It also includes retirements. Now, as council members either stayed quiet while the criminal activists attempted to murder police, While some others actually defended death threats against police, officers were busy giving their notice. We've been talking about this for a while, the number of applications that have been filed. The mass exodus started in May, 10 separations, then 16 in June, then 10 in July, then 14 in August, and then 39 in September, followed by 8 in October. The majority of these separations were patrol officers. And as a result, when you call 911, it's going to take a long time for them to get to you. And just to give you an example of what that means, the median priority response times for the North Precinct, 9 minutes. What are priority one calls? The dangerous, in-progress crimes that need immediate attention from police. 9 minutes. I want you to think about what that means for just a moment, because 9 minutes is a long time to have to wait if someone's trying to actively break into your home. 9 minutes, as much as people don't want to think about this, and thankfully, because at least in the Seattle area, as it relates to this issue, schools are not in session, but think about the unthinkable. If, God forbid, there were a school shooter, having to wait so long for cops to show up. This is not acceptable. This is not safe. We haven't seen numbers this low as the amount of deployable officers since 1990. And keep in mind, since 1990, number one, the population has increased by 44%. And number two, we've been on an upswing of crime. Right now, 60% year-over-year increase in homicides. 60, not 16, 60. And according to the document that's available right now at KTTH.com that was put out by the city, they fear the number of deployable staff members under certain scenarios could reach just under 1,100. There are significant safety concerns already. Imagine dropping down to 1,072, which is what they think is possible. And in a lot of ways, we might already be at that point. When we talk about deployable officers, the way that they're saying, it's not accurate. Because they consider people that we know are not deployable, like folks who are burning sick time, as deployable officers. Now, Jenny Durkin has not been leading on this, and that's why we are at where we are. It is true, obviously, that the Seattle City Council is more responsible for the officers leaving than Jenny Durkin, but Jenny Durkin could have done something to try to at least show the men and women in uniform that we care about them. She has done almost nothing. She has been almost entirely silent while cops are not only dehumanized by activists and, frankly, some city council members, she's been almost completely silent while criminals have tried to murder these cops. Do you remember any statements from Jenny Durkin after the quick dry cement was used to try to seal shut the East Precinct door while someone else, a group of other people, tried to burn the building down? Did you get a statement even? A tweet? Did you get a press conference? Nothing. Did you see a press conference condemning the frequent use of Molotov cocktails against cops? Because I haven't seen it. Did you see a tweet reacting to that Antifa agitator who hit the officer in the back of his head with a bat? It's not out there. Now, some of us, if we were to push, we maybe would get a statement. Not from Jenny Durkin. That's silly. But a statement from a spokesperson. Now, I set this up. I wanted to test it. Because I believe that even if you push, you'll have to really, really, really push for a statement. What happened yesterday? An officer was injured when a man threw a lit piece of lumber into his vehicle. The patrol vehicle that he was in was completely torched. Thankfully, the officer survived, just dealing with some minor burns. Did we get a statement from Jenny Durkin? No. In fact, I asked for a statement and still nothing. Still nothing. She doesn't know what she's doing. And as a result, the city of Seattle is suffering, and it's going to continue to suffer. This is fixable, but we need leadership. You're not going to get leadership in the city. These cops are leaving, and that's a shame. Help me shine a spotlight on this story if you back the blue the way I do. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770. Text R-A-N-T-Z to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to my story. Coming up in just about 30 seconds, Lauren Culp. Keep those text messages coming. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
The Washington State Supreme Court ended up being brazenly partisan in their decision to overturn the will of the people, saying that I guess all of you were confused by the $30 card tab fee. Now, of course, normal people realize none of us were confused, which is why 53% of the public voted to institute $30 card tab fees, which of course is what they've done many times in the past. But this is what we've come to expect in the state of Washington with the leadership that we have. And it all starts at the top, which is why we need to work as hard as we can to make sure that Governor Jay Inslee doesn't earn another term. Joining us on the line is his GOP opponent, Lauren Culp. Lauren Culp, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you, Jason. Thank you very much.
When you saw this news, I'm sure you were upset with so many others, but were you surprised?
I was not surprised. We've got a lot of left-leaning judges in this state, and it's no surprise to that either. We've had Democrat control of the governor's mansion for 35 years, and it's really interesting, isn't it, that common denominator in a few of these initiatives that have gone against citizens' rights and then gone against the wishes of the citizens for lower taxes is the attorney general. He writes the titles for these initiatives, yep. And that's one of the things that I read, that the judges said that the title was confusing.
Did you find the title to be confusing?
Absolutely not. I know that the citizens of Washington State knew what they were voting for, and this isn't the first time that they have. You know, the citizens of the state, I'm talking to thousands of them every day, and they are sick and tired of the high taxes in this state, and that includes car taps.
Yeah.
And it's about time that we have a governor that understands that, that has lived in the real world all of his life, right? Like I have. I ran a business that ran Olympia for 20 years. I know what it's like to run a business in this state. I know what it's like to raise a family. Jay Inslee has been out of touch with citizens of Washington State for decades because he hasn't been living in the real world. And we need to get him out in November.
What would you do if you were governor after getting a result like this from the Supreme Court?
Well, it wouldn't have gotten that far. I would have had a conversation with the attorney general and say, hey, you know, make sure that you write titles that are not up for interpretation, for one thing. And then if this did happen, I would immediately call for a special session of the people's representatives in the legislature and let them weigh in and get this fixed. It's very obvious for 10, 15 years, 20 years maybe, citizens want lower car tabs. And this government, this governor, this attorney general, and their left-wing judges have been fighting it all along the way. You know, if you look back, Gary Locke called a special session immediately. He wasn't for lower car tabs. He wasn't for lower taxes. But he did the right thing. He called a special session to get the citizens' representatives involved. Right, that's why we have multiple branches of government. But Jay Inslee, all he will say is, well, I'm open to that. Well, he needs to be more than open to that. He needs to do it. But it's really not going to matter here in about 18 days. He's going to be voted out of office. We are not leading by a little bit, but we have a commanding lead over him in our internal polls. But we are fighting every single day like we're 20 points behind. Because we the people are going to send a message to Olympia and to the establishment that we run this state. That's how this state and this country was set up, that we the people are in charge, and we are going to take back charge on November 3rd, and in a big way.
If you're just joining me, I'm talking with the Republic Police Chief, Lauren Culp. He's running, of course, against Governor Jay Inslee. He's got an event coming up in just a few hours at 6:30 in South Bend. It's right near Margaret Olson Park. And then tomorrow in the city of Lacey over at Charlie Safari, these are meet and greets slash peaceful protests where you're able to get together and talk with the candidate to actually get to know him and ask him some questions that you have on your mind. Because I imagine, Lauren, you're getting a whole bunch of people who are just upset about the general direction of this state.
Right. And you would think that, you know, only conservatives would support me, but that's not the case, Jason. That's what's so exciting about this. That's why we are so far in the lead, is because we're getting Democrats and independents, people from all across the political spectrum, are done with Jay Inslee. They're done with him being out of touch with what's really going on in real life in Washington State. And when I talk about the rule of law and the Constitution, when it is followed by our governor and our government, everyone is protected equally. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. It doesn't matter your education, your age, or your income, or your gender, or your preference. Everyone's protected equally under the law. But we have a governor currently who just makes arbitrary decisions on his own or with his high-paid consulting companies that we are paying $164,000 a week for him to have.
Yeah, by the way, apparently he didn't realize he was paying that. I love that moment of the debate when you brought that up. He's like, I'm not aware of that.
Right. He's not aware of a lot of things. You know, he's got a whole group of yes people around him and attorneys and special interest groups. I don't even think he shows up at the office and does anything. That's how out of touch he is, with even within his own office. So I've lived in the real world. I served in the military. I was a sergeant with your drill sergeant school. I spent 20 years building my own business right here in Olympia, where I'm at today, and then 10 years in law enforcement. You know, I've lived in the real world, raised my kids. My grandkids are being raised in it. And I know that this is not a family-friendly or a business-friendly state, and so many people are waking up to that fact as well. Every time Jay Inslee opens his mouth, that's some more votes for Lauren Culp.
Well, then hopefully he'll continue to talk, because I agree with you. The more people actually hear from him and how flustered he is on basic questions, the worse he comes off. CulpForGovernor.com is the place to go to learn more about the campaign and how you can help. Again, 6:30 tonight, there's an event in South Bend. There are two events tomorrow, one in Lacey, another in Graham, and then on Sunday, Gig Harbor. Lots of other events coming up over the course of the next several days, as we're 18 days away from this election. And of course, a lot of people right now have ballots in hand. Most of you should. If you don't, you'll have it either later today or tomorrow. Make sure you vote as quickly as possible so Lauren's campaign and the others, like Matt Larkin, who's running for attorney general, to Jesse Jensen, who is running in Washington's 8th, they know that you've actually submitted your ballot, so they don't have to waste time contacting you, and they can spend their time talking to other people who maybe are still on the fence. Again, CulpForGovernor.com. It's all spelled out. Lauren Culp, thank you so much for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into last night's dueling town halls between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. Welcome back to The Jason Rant Show, live on this Friday afternoon. For those of you looking for a way to back the blue and donate to a worthy cause, we're going to have another opportunity for you to do that in this hour. But before that, let's talk about last night's dueling town halls. They saw a ratings win, traditional ratings win at least, for Joe Biden to the tune of about 2.5-3 million viewers. And then on the digital rating side, the Trump team won by about 6 million. I don't know how they all even itself out. I don't know if we're cheating the system a little bit because Biden got an extra 30 minutes than Donald Trump. It does not matter to me. This is not what the story is about in this case. The story should be twofold. Number one, there was no reason to cancel the debate. they did two town hall meetings at the same time on the same night in front of other people and a moderator. We could have very easily had this debate. Now, the only thing that maybe the Trump campaign got out of this was another highlight about how the media is not objective. Because Steve Scully from C-SPAN was supposed to be the moderator. Steve Scully lied about being hacked to cover up the fact that he is not an objective moderator. This has not been a good week for the Presidential Debate Commission. Oh my gosh. But what is the other big story? I would argue the selection of the people asking questions. So big picture, these two town halls were very different. President Trump was getting grilled by Savannah Guthrie on NBC. Some people have called her out as being overtly antagonistic. And I think there's some validity to that, but I'm not going to jump on her. I'll say this. It wasn't a town hall because she asked 45 questions and the people who were there, only 10 of them were actually able to ask President Trump questions. But Trump held his own with Savannah Guthrie. I think he actually held his own. I thought he did a pretty good job. There was a moment when they were talking about the taxing where I think he was rambling a little bit and he felt it seemed like he was a little bit too defensive. But outside of that, I thought he did a really good job, high energy and clear in his communication. Biden got a whole bunch of softball questions. He was low energy. He didn't say anything that would disqualify him any more than things he've said in the past, but he didn't impress anyone. You know, this whole idea, because my consistency, I said going into this, I thought it was a mistake for Donald Trump to have a town hall up against Joe Biden because I wanted more people to hear some of the crazy ideas and the rambling, stumbling Joe Biden. I want more people to hear that because I believe the more you hear that, the less likely you are to feel confident in the fact that Joe Biden can actually be a fully functioning president. So I'm glad that Biden won the ratings war last night. Now, this is my analysis. Don't have any information to back this up. But if I were to look at that, my guess is the reason why you watch that is you don't know what he's going to say. You know what Trump is going to say, right? We know what to expect from President Trump. He is pretty consistent across the board. He was less brash last night. But we know generally what he's going to say. Joe Biden, not so much. I suppose if I were in the business of spinning for the campaign, I might look at this and spin it and say, from the Trump campaign, more people watch Joe Biden because they're just not sure they actually want to vote for him. They haven't made up their mind because maybe they don't like some of the brashness of Donald Trump, but they're definitely not sold on Joe Biden, so more people tuned in. I don't know if that's true. I do know that he got a bunch of softballs, and I don't think he did particularly well, at least when it comes to certain topics that mainstream America would view as kind of crazy, kind of fringe. And yet again, it seems like a town hall invited their guests by connecting with like the local Democratic Party and saying, hey, do you have any buddies you want to get on the list? We're desperate. We need some folks. Because one person who asked the question, his name was Nathan Osborne. Do you know who Nathan Osborne is?
I don't.
How do you not know that he worked for the Obama-Biden White House?
He did?
Yeah.
Wow. That seems a little conflict of interest.
Just a little bit. Because last night, they just identified him as a voter who works in communications. Well, the communications he worked in was when he was a press aide in 2008 for the Commerce Department under Obama Biden. Now, would I have a problem if he asked a tough question and they announced he was a former staff member for the Obama Biden administration? No, I couldn't call it out as a conflict of interest because at least they acknowledged it. They didn't acknowledge it, which means they either didn't do any sort of due diligence on the people they selected, however they selected them to ask their questions, or they hit it. Or they purposely hit it. And my guess is they purposefully hit it because we are in now, what, town hall number 3, in which there have been stories about how very clear Democrats have somehow either been presumed by the network or just telling us that they're unaffiliated voters, or maybe they're Democrats who haven't made up their mind, or Republicans who haven't made up their mind when they clearly did. So he asked a question about court packing, and Biden gives a confusing answer.
I have not been a fan of court packing because I think it just generates what will happen. Whoever wins, it just keeps moving in a way that is inconsistent with what is going to be manageable.
Now, by the way, the last part of that is just a bunch of rambling words. I have no clue what he said, like, from an English. He spoke English. I know what he means, but there was no coherent thought there.
We really missed an opportunity to play our favorite game.
I know, but I know what he means in this game.
Still not a fan?
Well, I'm not a fan. I then say it depends on how this turns out. Not how he wins, but how it's handled. How it's handled. But there's a number of things that are going to be coming up, and there's going to be a lot of discussion about other alternatives as well.
Okay. So, you don't like it, but if you don't get your way with Amy Coney Barrett, you'll go ahead and move with it anyway. Even though you say it's a bad idea, you'll do it if it means it gives you some power. That's your new position? Okay. I mean, it's certainly more clear than his past positions. This is an outrageous position, of course. It should scare people. That should legitimately scare Democrats. This is not the system that you want for our Supreme Court. Now, another person who asked a question, her name is Mika Hake. Do you know who Mika is?
I don't.
Seemed like a very nice lady. And I'm sure she is a wonderful person, which is probably why Ezra Nanez decided to marry her. Do you know who Ezra is?
No, I don't know who Ezra is.
He's a high-profile Democrat in Pennsylvania who, in 2018, ran a campaign challenging Republican State Senate Majority Leader Jay Corman. That according to Fox News.
So this is someone else.
Someone who is married to a high-profile Democrat without acknowledging it. Just acknowledge it. Now, her question was about support for her transgender daughter. And Joe Biden ends up saying in this meandering way, because he needs to tell a story all the time, that 8-year-old kids should be able to choose their own gender.
I was being dropped off to get an application in the center of our city, Wilmington, Delaware, the corporate capital of the world at the time. And these two men, I'm getting out to get an application to be a lifeguard in the African-American community because there was a big swimming pool complex.
Uh-huh.
And these two men, well-dressed, leaned up and hugged one another and kissed one another. I'm getting out of the car at the light, and I turn to my dad. My dad looked at me and said, Joey, it's simple. They love each other. The idea that an 8-year-old child or a 10-year-old child decides, you know, I decided I want to be transgender. That's what I think I'd like to be. It'll make my life a lot easier. There should be zero discrimination. And what's happening is too many transgender women of color are being murdered.
Oh, wow, that was a pivot. I mean, let's just try to sneak in all the social justice pandering we can in one single answer. I last night when I heard this, I kind of did a double take because he says if you're transgender, you decide to be transgender. Because usually on the left, the belief is you are born transgender. You're born with this feeling that you're not in the quote unquote right body. But he says decide you're transgender. Couple days ago, using a very, very old piece of writing of Amy Coney Barrett, she says sexual preference instead of sexual orientation, and the left went crazy. You believe that gay and lesbian and transgender people are just preferring to be with the person of the same sex, whatever it is, when they're born that way, when we are born that way. But here, I guess they're just deciding. And I like the idea that he's saying, you know, if an 8-year-old decides to be transgender to have an easier life, an 8-year-old does not have a difficult life as it relates to the notion that they might, in fact, be transgender. 8-year-olds should not choose their gender. You do not allow an 8-year-old to choose frivolous things like eating ice cream for dinner every single day of the week. You would say, no, I am the adult. I know what's better. You should probably hold that same exact position on things that are very, very, very important. Not because transgender people don't exist. They do. I believe that you are born transgender. However, an 8-year-old likely doesn't know what it is they're even thinking or feeling. Why? Because all of us have been 8 years old, and no 8-year-old knows what they're thinking or feeling. I didn't know I was gay at 8 years old. I probably didn't know, because I seem to remember thinking Sarah Michelle Gellar as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the good one. I kid you, Christy Swanson, she was the OG. I was all like, she's very attractive.
Well, everyone thinks Buffy's attractive.
I'm just saying. And that show had to have been, because that was on when I was in high school, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I was in diapers when that show was on.
Oh, shut up. I'm not that old. I'm 38 years old. You're just young. Regardless of ideology, society has pretty much said you are not to trust an 8-year-old on anything. It doesn't mean that you approach the issue with dismissal or a lack of sensitivity. I don't think that at all. But this idea that you're just going to say a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old is just going to be like, I want to be a girl. Okay, let's get a dress. Or I want to be a boy. Okay, let's do traditionally boy things. Like, you can go ahead and embrace who your kid is in a sensitive and understanding way. But to choose gender as if it is fluid and as if an 8-year-old understands both the nuances behind that decision and the long-term consequences or short-term consequences of that decision, I think is naive. To think that it's just, they're going to be able to handle it. And I don't know how many mainstream voters that idea is going to hit home for. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message. That number is actually really, really, really important because when we come back, we're going to tell you how you can help police officers in Seattle deal with people who are literally trying to murder them. There's something very simple that you can do. We're going to tell you what that is when we come back. Jason Rand Show live on this Friday afternoon. I have an ask for you, but before we get to that simple ask, let's talk about the update to what happened yesterday in the city of Seattle. An officer is now out of the hospital after a man tried to kill him by setting his patrol car on fire while the officer was in the patrol car. Now, we don't know the motive behind what happened yesterday, though we suspect, based on folks we have talked to, that it was a mentally ill homeless man responsible. Don't know. But we do now have the body camera footage from that officer shows that after he yelled at this man to stop for a second time, this man who is holding on to this flaming stick of wood, the man rushes the patrol vehicle and puts that flaming stick of wood inside the patrol vehicle.
He's just walking down the alley southbound with the stick on fire, and it is very on fire.
Yeah, it's very on fire.
Shots fired, threw the stick at me.
The officer fired his gun, did not strike the suspect. That's when backup arrived, tased the suspect, and took him into custody. Now, obviously, the car had been completely torched. Here is an SPD spokesperson, Mark Jamieson.
While officers were taking the suspect into custody, the patrol vehicle became engulfed in flames.
Now, we on this show will always, always, always back the blue. Full stop. In an area that is filled with anti-cop voices that are amplified by certain media outlets, by certain council members, we will back the blue. in an organization that I work closely with in raising funds for Seattle police officers is the Seattle Police Foundation. And right now, if you text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770, that's 1-800-465-8770, I'm going to send you a link to donate to the Seattle Police Foundation to purchase fire safety kits for every single officer, every single one. With your help, we will raise enough money to purchase a fire safety kit for every single cop. Now, in these kits, it includes fire-resistant face and hand protection. It offers a personal fire suppression system. It also offers just some basic first aid burn treatments so that each of these officers can actually take it with them during their shifts. Now, each of these kits cost $100 or so. If you have $100 to give, awesome. Go ahead and give. If you got more to give, give it. If you only have $5 to give, give that too. Because in this city, these cops are under siege. Too many are under siege. And we need to step up and back the blue. Lauren, for example, just donated $36.50. Do you have that to give? I would like to raise $10,000 by the end of this show. And I understand that that's a lot because it's a Friday. It's a Friday. People are tired. People are not listening as long as they normally would. People are going to start tuning in a little bit later and even miss this. So that means if you're listening right now, I need you to step up. Can we raise $10,000 to purchase these fire kits for every single police officer within the SPD? I hope that we can. But the truth of the matter is, I asked you to donate by texting the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770. I don't see a lot of text messages coming in. I see a few. That's not a lot, is it? What we just got.
No, no. We've
done this
so many more in the past.
And we've raised, what was it, $35,000 the last time?
I think $35,000.
Why is our text machine not completely broken from people who want to back the blue with me? I truly believe that you guys out there support police officers. Here is a very simple way to even just give $5 to show your appreciation. I mean, you can do a little bit more than $5. I mean, if that's all you have, you can do it. But I kind of know our listeners. They've got more. Text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770 and do what Debbie just did, which was donate $15 to purchase these fire kits. Give what you can. Show the police officers out there that we care very, very deeply about them. Text the keyword donate to 1-800-465-8770. And I'll send you the link. We also have it available at our Twitter page. It's the Jason Rant Show.